from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Krista Hendricks.
You know, I'm trying to retrain my brain to stop saying the .net.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's a new thing because you know what? It's dumb. Like when I say it, all I hear is .net.
.net.
Who uses a .net? Nobody. No, I'm not a network. What is that? I got to get off that shit.
Well, I tried to get a hold of that guy who has the .com and he didn't respond to me. I don't know if he didn't think I was an actual part of the group, so he's like, I'm not going to reply to this strange woman trying to buy this domain.
I don't know. You know how it is. Every time you're trying to buy somebody's domain, they're like, it's worth $100,000. Dude, no, it's not.
I think, well, what are we willing to pay for it? Maybe $100? Maybe.
What's our maximum? I think 200 is our maximum. I think at 200, you're like, look, you've never done anything with it. I wanted $200. I think that's fair.
I think that should be our goal for 2012. Get the goodatheist.com domain. Yay!
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool. You know, speaking of cool, and actually speaking of uncool, you are about to leave in a few days to go back to Calgary, leaving me behind in Montreal, all alone.
Aww. This is what happens when you date someone or engage to someone or marry to someone who you met through the internet, unfortunately. Because I live, well, I don't really live anywhere, neither does Jacob, but I was for a long time based out of Western Canada, mostly Calgary, and Jake is based out of Eastern Canada. So sometimes our commitments have us on different ends of the country for many months.
Yeah, let's just say that it's kind of an unpleasant part. It has to happen every once in a while. We don't like it. And it's just kind of like it figures that on the last couple days I have you working. I have you working here.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's a good thing, because I noticed all those comments. Where is Krista?
There were a few questions. In fact, Krista? Some questions directed at you, and there were a few of them that I thought we would talk about on the show. The other thing we're going to talk about on the show is this crazy viral video that came out about Kony, Joseph Kony, called Kony 2012. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the video, its aftermath, and what my opinions are in terms of its how I reflect on this in terms of what the lessons we can learn as a scene, as a group, as a...
I think we should also say it's less of a viral video and more of a popularized documentary project.
It's hard to describe, but we'll try to do our best. We're going to mumble through and try to give you as adequate a description of the whole situation because, you know, luckily... The cool thing is as time goes on, you always get a little bit of more information. People do some digging, and you get to just read a whole bunch of different sides. We're going to be talking about all the different sides of this whole issue. That's what's so great about doing a show in hindsight. Yeah, never do it right when it's happening. Be like, why don't you wait and see what the fuck is what?
Well, I mean, technically the Kony 2012 thing is still happening. I mean, it's going to be happening on April 20th, so it's happening.
No,
all
yeah, I,
of
I mean, but I feel like some of the major points have already been brought up. Like, essentially, whenever you get big and the eye of the internet is on you, like the eye of the people, as they look down on you, and when it's focused, I mean, it'll air out any dirty laundry you got cooking up. That's why anyone who ever does this, by the way, should be terrified. Because one day will come that, you know, that the terrifying possibility that you may indeed become famous, and then things that you have said at certain times where maybe you don't even believe that shit anymore, but you said it, and now it's out there, waiting to destroy you. So... To go through that first initial phase is something else. But before we talk about this, I want to go back to the fact that you were soon to leave and that I have you working, just as one of those things of saying, this is the consequence of very much of save the good atheist, to keep costs down, to really try to save this thing, to make sure that we keep going. I hope you guys have really appreciated the consistent shows and the dates where it's appearing, and you're like, oh my god, it's on time. I'm like, yeah, I know. Yeah, discipline. I'm really giving it my best shot. But remember, folks, before we start the show, I want to remind you, this is still a campaign to save the good atheist.
I actually have an idea when it comes to your discipline with the show. I have an idea, and it's totally 100% stolen from the Vlog Brothers, who have become 100% obsessed with over the last few days.
When will you stop talking about this?
I will never stop talking about them.
I'm going to smother you in the night.
So here's my idea. I think that the audience should be allowed to give you punishments when you miss a show or when you're late.
What kind of punishments, though?
I don't know. You'd put it on the website and just say, hey, I miss a show or I was a day late and I need a punishment, and then the audience can punish you by, like, making you do the cinnamon challenge.
So did they really find it a problem where as soon as they missed something, there was a lot of angry, you know, there was a lot of anger from people?
Is that what they find? No, it's not so much that there's anger from people. It's just about when you commit to something online, it is important to stick with it because, you know,
reputation is everything.
Reputation is everything. So they decided, and it's funny because, like, even one time when they were sick, their audience was like, don't worry about it, we know you're sick, and they were still like, no, we're gonna do the punishment because that's what we promised. And I think people really respect that. So I also think that, you know, the human brain is very motivated by consequences. So, this is my proposal to you, Jacob Bortin.
Oh, boy.
I think that in the future, if the Save Good Atheist campaign works, we should turn your audience into your discipline mechanism. And when you...
Sounds frightening. Terrifying.
And when you are late for a podcast or when you skip a podcast, you should have to do a punishment of their choosing.
I feel like there's some component of this, which is you who wants to see me being punished.
Oh, yes, very much so.
And I think that's sick and it's about fornication and so on and so forth.
Is this a free bonus show? Can everybody hear this?
This is a free bonus show because, remember, it's the Save Good Atheist, so they get a shitload of shows.
So write in the comments on the website, goodatheist.net, whether you think this is a good idea, whether you would participate in the Punish Jacob plan to get him to stick to his podcasting schedule. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Here's the thing. I'll create a forum post about it. It's the simplest way for us to be able to keep track. Use the forums for, as much as you can, people, too. And, you know, this is another thing, too, I want to mention as the last thing of the Save the Good Atheist campaign. And this is actually probably the most important, is that even some of you that are like, well, I still don't want to give money for whatever reason, which I can respect. It's the fucking internet, all right? And $20 is $20. But if you still want to save it, every time you click like on something that I put up, if you go to the Facebook fan page and you like it, I mean, there's thousands of you guys. If you do these things, then you all become like a bigger voice that pushes me forward. Like, every like is like my web dick. I need my web dick to be engorged. So please, my web dick with your likes. Could you do that, please?
I think you need to explain what the hell you mean by web dick, because I think maybe 10 people understood what you meant
by
that.
Okay, web penis is basically the version of your display. Your display of how much pull you have, how many people follow you, how many people listen to your stuff, why anyone should give a shit about you, basically. And every like, every share, all of those things, that's what it's all about.
It's
that's
about
what it's
credibility.
A part of.
Polite way to say web dick is credibility.
Yeah. I'm not about the polite way. I had one person, this is actually quite funny, one person who became a member very recently, and then they wrote in the comments being like, an F-bomb in the first 5 minutes. Can't this be a family show? I'm like, no. No, it's not a fucking family show, okay? You want a family show? Then watch something nice. You know, watch something for the whole family can enjoy. If for you, using strong language is a problem, it's like, I close the lines of communication because that person has used a bad word, and therefore I will omit what they have to say, and I'll say, no, only small minds swear. Oh, yeah? Really? That sounds like a really fucking open-minded statement. So I'm never really too worried when that happens. I'm like, good, chase it away. Not a family show. Although, you know what? Truth be told, I mean, 13 and up, that's what it is. At 13 years old, they're swearing more than I am.
Okay, oh, well, okay, 13 and up, abortion van, pointing Kate as Exhibit A, abortion van. I'm not really sure I feel comfortable with a 13
I think
up.
In Sweden it rolls. It just rolls, you know, 14.
We're going to get letters.
Yeah, well, you know what, if 14-year-olds are having sex, an abortion van joke is something that they're probably very aware of. Right. People grow, you know, kids are probably growing up pretty fast. I just don't get it. I mean, I feel like such an old fogey now. I'm part of that generation that just didn't have the internet, didn't have the wealth of knowledge and smut and crap that exists right now. I didn't have that, you know? Like, for me, unlocking the mysteries of something as amazing as a Commodore 64, the very first computer I discovered, a computer which, by the way, was owned by the widowed husband of my father's then-girlfriend. He was a gamer back when video games were Commodore 64s and text-based games and things like that. Yeah, he was one of the original gamers. Probably never even talked to anyone about it. But he had all this system, and no one knew how it worked. But it was there. It was a fucking treasure trove of adventure if you could unlock it. And it took a long time for me. I didn't have any other way to do it. But you know what? Like now, if those kinds of mysteries, your ability to solve them now with a really sophisticated understanding of how you search the internet, shit. Shit, I would have figured it out in an afternoon, damn it. I mean, it was like I've spent years trying to uncover this programming, like Rosetta language, breaking apart code, being like, what does this mean? Someone could have told me in 3 seconds what it means now. So what the hell is that generation going to be like? I'm very confused.
Well, I'm definitely a big part of that generation. I think, like, you know, sometimes when people a little bit older than me are talking, I mean, I'm 24, people a little bit older than me are talking, and even when they talk about things like encyclopedias.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand. It's my brain.
What is
yeah.
that?
Yeah, I don't understand it. And I was in the library club growing up. And, you know, even at that time, nobody used the encyclopedias. It was always like, oh, well, there's a computer in the back. You can just Google it.
Well, the encyclopedias always seemed dated. I mean, you looked at them, it's like, oh, encyclopedia, 1976. Oh, yeah, that sounds current. What was going on then? The Negroid race. Oh, boy.
Well, there's so many, you know, pieces of misinformation in regular encyclopedias, which brings us to an interesting question that was sent to me by Richard on my Facebook fan page. He was asking, well, he said, thank you, we're amazing, lots of nice things. And then he was asking about how his friends keep posting things to their Facebook walls, and they keep posting things in general that turn out to be misinformed. And he was wondering basically where we get our science information or where we get our information. And I kind of asked him to clarify, what do you mean? And he basically means, where do you get easy to consume tiny science bites that can be, that you would consider reliable information that is well sourced, that people can trust, so that people aren't constantly digesting misinformation?
Well, I guess the first thing, like, that question's a pretty huge question.
It is a pretty huge question.
It is really huge, because it doesn't just touch on what are the sources. Because I could list you a website, and then, say, tomorrow, standards kind of go, you know, lower.
Exactly.
The person's no longer posting, because, like, once in a while, it's not just an organization. It's, like, somebody I'm following, you know, somebody who I know is, like, really on top of that, looking at that shit. Like, a good example, Ben Goldacre. I've talked about him on a lot of occasions. I'm subscribed to his blog, and because he deals mostly with stuff in UK, especially in terms of healthcare there and that kind of stuff. But he's a good example of someone.
He's the bad science guy?
He's the bad science guy, yeah, exactly.
So his blog is badscience.net? He uses a .net. That's interesting.
Yay, .net. Yeah, but I mean, that's not his primary blog, though, is bengoldacre.com, I think, where he posts more often. I'm not 100% sure. Not 100% sure. But you know what? That question, first of all, makes me think, number one, I think, you know, I do want to make essentially an article with my top tens of, like, who should you subscribe to in order to be able to get a good idea of whatever scene that's somewhat interesting. Like, what are some good history blogs? What are some good science blogs? Stuff that you guys would obviously be obsessive about and wanting to find the right people to follow, because that is really where we are now, right? We're at this position where we're like, Who do we follow? Whose information seems reliable? Who can I trust? Well, these are good questions. So we mentioned, first of all, guys, you're like, okay, well, I accept his scientific credibilities, and I follow him. But that doesn't mean necessarily that I trust everything that Ben Goldacre says.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's important is that when we're going to give our list later on in the show about the people that we're going to recommend to provide you with, you know, nice, tight, well-edited, interesting science bites that are pretty well-researched. But the reality is that everybody makes mistakes. And I think what we should talk about is how to avoid misinformation online. And I really want to talk about that if you're going to be getting your information from anywhere, not just about being online, you should be coming with this attitude when you're reading things in a peer-reviewed journal all the time, constantly thinking this way, but you need to start approaching things with a skeptical eye.
Yeah, you're like, how do I know this is true? Like, where's this news coming from? Who's reporting this? What the hell's going on? Like, how do I understand this situation? And a lot of times you discover that where the information comes from makes it so that, you know, you're ultimately, it's difficult for you to really believe that the information is reliable, because you realize that even as information is being distributed by individuals, they have their own interests. Here's a good example. Let's say there's some kind of conflict that happens. You're in a parking lot and there's a fight. All right, the police come by and they ask, what happened? What are the odds of anyone getting the story straight about what really happened that comes from the outside, especially considering the fact that witnesses that are there are from either sides of these groups that have interests, like, I don't want my friend being in trouble. I want to avoid the law. There's all kinds of different interests going on. Like, how are you really supposed to make up your mind? And even these individuals who might decide to themselves, I'm going to be fair and tell the truth, can they even trust their own memory? So the problem that we have right away is that information, the dissemination of information begins with looking at how that information starts to break down. How does the truth get lost in all this? And accepting the fact that the bits of truth are always getting lost. The best thing that you can do is trying to do the same thing that, you know, science does, which is try to extrapolate the truth from varying lines of evidence, like to look at where, you know, stories are coming from, where information is coming from. Like, a good thing to remember is when you're looking at the source of something, like, you know, let's say you're going on Wikipedia and you're just reading some articles about something. The great thing about Wikipedia isn't just those short articles. It really is the reference material that you follow. And it's the following the reference materials of the stuff that you followed, like following up multiple layers. And truth be told, doing it requires a tremendous amount of work. Like, Carissa will tell you that when I do my research information, like, I don't do anything but that. It's dull-ass work. No one would ever sneak a peek at my browsers. Besides, most of the time when you're really digging deep at the articles, you're finding old-ass websites that look like they were done in 1990, because that's how old the information is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The more you dig down to try and find the original source for information, the more you weep about the terrible 1980s.
That's how you know it's probably, oh, wait, something about this is good. It looks too shitty now to not be true.
Absolutely. There's another option. You can use Google's date filter to Google a quote from the article that you're reading in order to find the earliest post of that article, and usually that will lead you to the original citation of that article, or the original posting of the article, which is usually cited. Because I find that sometimes when you're reading about something, they're not always properly cited.
Yeah, the dates will sort of switch. I do a lot of searches for dates, specifically when I do, as of late, I've actually have been looking at some of the older shows, doing research on much older stuff just for fun, really, to look back at that information and being specific about what years the information comes out in, like, mm-hmm. What's the difference between the information in 2010 and the information in 2011. Yeah. And every once in a while, really what you find as you search is you'll find the rare gems. Like, I remember I found this really great magazine article when I was trying to find out this woman who had been essentially abducted by the Taliban in Pakistan and being held hostage. She was a Canadian citizen. The Canadian government basically said, like, fuck off. We don't give you any money whatsoever. And she basically died. And to really find out the story, digging through it took forever. But finally, when I reached, like, this one article that seemed to be able to, like, just piece it all together, at that point, like, it was easier to trust that article because I had seen all these different sources. And then you know, watching them being galvanized together, I'm like, this seems like the better interpretation of the facts. And that's the ultimate thing. That's the trickiest thing, is that people are interpreting facts. Facts happen, but they require interpretation.
Absolutely.
And so deciding how that is interpreted, what your role is, even in sort of how you interpret things, like your own biases that come in whenever you're reading something you don't like or you don't agree with. Holy shit, what a complicated venture. That's why the question is so huge.
Well, I mean, I think anybody who is ever in the media or has ever had a feature on them will know that, like, this, I'm taking this totally from experience. All entertainers joke about this, where, you know, you read an article about another entertainer and you're like, oh, that's really interesting. But then as soon as you start to get, you know, features written on you, you never ever trust magazine articles or any kind of articles ever again.
Because they get it so wrong.
Every
so
single
wrong.
Article written about me has something in there, if not a lot of things in there, that are totally, entirely taken out of context or completely incorrect. You know, because a person comes in and tries to get the information about what you're doing or what you're saying, and they're trying to write it in a way that's interesting, and they're filtering it through their own experience of the world. So it's not always going to be dead on. It's not always going to be the way that it is in your mind. It reminds us of how absolutely trapped we are in our own minds. You can communicate to someone else, like, we're talking to you guys over this podcast now, but there's nothing we can do to really prove that you're hearing the things that we're saying the way that we mean for them to be understood.
Yeah, well, you have to also remember that in I think if you look at most of the messages out there that become effective for whatever reason, this will lead us slowly to the discussion of Kony 2012, which will be a long discussion. But yes, this whole notion that the first ones that are always make the strongest impact are normally the ones that have some degree of emotional, like an emotional quality to them. All right. And that is really important to remember, because for the most part, when you're talking to someone else, you don't know this, but you are shouting at them, in a sense, what your opinion is. You're really trying to impose that opinion. You're not just saying it for shits and giggles. You are saying it because you're trying to sort of like put it out there to reshape the world the way that you see it. It is in a sense, like, it's not a strong assault, but it is a bit of an assault on the other ideas and beliefs of people around you.
So it's clear that you're trying to lead this conversation to the 2012 topic, so let's just wrap up this section.
Wrap it up.
So what I would suggest to you, Richard, is to talk to your friends and just let them know that they need to start being more skeptical. I honestly believe that there's nothing wrong with delicately and tactfully calling them out on the things they post being incorrect. I did so with my mother, for the most part, and she has become more careful and more skeptical on the internet, and I'm very grateful for that. If you're looking for information that's wrong, you can always go to Snopes. They're really good at finding the rumors online that are incorrect and exposing them.
And they look
them.
Like they were designed in the 1990s.
Yeah, which is great. So they must
very be trustworthy.
The other thing you can do is Google the title of your article or the title of the original source, along with the word wrong, inconsistent, misinformation, corrections, and usually
criticism.
Yeah, usually you'll get some information from people coming from the other end. Also, it's important to understand the author's lean. So, are they left leaning? Are they right leaning? Are they religious leaning? This is going to help you understand whether or not this information is fully trustworthy.
Or not just that, but I mean, you have to try to see it in the context of the person writing it. Like, they're very much, every individual is very much influenced by the culture around them. They cannot change that aspect of them. Even though they may think of themselves as, I'm open-minded or I'm willing to listen to other things, the cultural forces around them make that unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Very fucking unlikely. And that's just the normal default role. It's not the only role. It's not the one. You can escape this. It is a lot of work. The first thing I would say, like the best way for you to know if you're doing the right thing is that you're uncomfortable reading something all the time. If you don't like reading it, you're along the right tracks, because you really have to see the other side. You have to push through that horrible barrier.
Always challenging your ideas.
I know. It's hard. It sucks. I mean, I hate it. I hate it because it involves reading things that I find are foolish or make me angry. But it is also important to understand where all of this is coming from, because now can I segue into what I want to
no,
talk about?
No, we gotta list all of our awesome sciencey things that we follow.
You list yours. I'm gonna put it in the notes.
No, we should do. I was thinking we should do one at a time. Like, I'll do one and then you do one.
I don't think I have that many.
Oh, okay.
How many do you have?
I've got like 5.
Oh. Okay, maybe I do have enough. Yeah, all right, okay. Let's do it.
So I'll do one. So first one I'm going to talk about is
what
the
if
one.
We have the same ones, though.
Well, then it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Maybe I'll run out. It'll be a game. You can.
This doesn't sound really prepared, but all right.
This is not prepared.
Wing it, shit.
This is how we roll.
No, this is how you roll. You sprung this up on me. You know, normally I just know what's going on. I segue nicely.
Hey,
I move things along.
You made me do a show when I should be packing, so this is your punishment. Okay, so first one I would recommend is you want to go onto YouTube and you want to subscribe to SciShow, which is ran by Hank Green, which is one of the Vlog Brothers, and I love him. We share the same birthday, May 5th. Woo! And the love of corn dogs, and his show is very good. Jake featured it on The Good Atheist a little while ago.
Featured it twice.
He does a show on Wednesday on the SciShow where he talks about science news.
They're very productive, and it almost sent me into depression.
Yeah. Also, Google Hank Green's song about quarks. It's awesome, and it's been stuck in my head all night.
All right, stop sucking his dick. Let's move on.
Go, your turn.
All right. The first and most obvious thing that I would say is I usually subscribe to the larger blog conglomerates. Like I have Scientific American has a blog section, and Wired.com also has a blog section, and they just have a bunch of science bloggers that are featured. And most of the time, you're going to get some really cutting edge news on science. That's one of my favorite ones. It's just like you could spend all day on it. On doing this, which reminds me, like, I haven't totally rounded up my science, RSS feed, but Carissa knows that I'm pretty efficient when it comes to just getting all of my news and things like that, like, and I haven't even really spent that much time. Like, I could just make it badass. And one of the things that I think I could do, if given enough time, is make it so that people could download this same subscription. So you could be subscribed to all, like, it's probably about 100 websites that I would recommend, and I could just really make that list. It'd probably take me a couple days. It depends on your reaction. We'll
you
see
are
in the
losing
forums.
Losing the speed.
All right.
Keep it snappy. Okay. On that note, I would recommend if you guys like podcasts, you're going to want to go and subscribe to Scientific America's Science in 60 Seconds. They also have the 60 Second Mind, the 60 Second Earth, 60 Second Space Podcast, 60 Second Health, and 60 Second Tech, where if, you know, Richard was talking about wanting really good little snippets of information, these are really good little snippets of information, and the nice thing is there's always a blog post on Scientific America that further explains the topic. So if you listen to them, you know, if you listen to all of them, it's 6 minutes out of your day to get the news and all these different sections in science, and then you can make a decision about which one you actually think is interesting and go read more on their website. Go!
Okay, well, another thing that you can do is that you can set up a Google alert for certain keywords, all right? So if you have an interest in, say, you know, atheism or, science is a bit broad, but whatever, like, you choose your keyword and you put it in as part of your RSS subscription, and it will give you links, like, a lot of links. Trust me, this thing will just shit them out if you're not being very specific about what you want. But nevertheless, this is a pretty good way for you to keep track of stuff that people are just mentioning. Because remember, it'll look along keywords and tags. And, you know, websites that are really diligent about that usually put that out there. And what you'll normally find when you read that is articles that make you really angry. It's a good way to just get angry. I recommend it for the people who just like that.
Absolutely. If you've never heard of TED.com before, I'm going to do a huge favor and introduce you to this amazing wealth of really interesting videos. TED is an event that happens one place a year, and then there's a bunch of TEDxes which happen all over the year, and it's a huge thing now, and what they do is they have speakers doing short, concise talks on different topics. They have a technology section, they have a science section, so you can go on to TED.com, go down to Talks Related To section, and click on Science, and you can watch all of their videos, and you will probably cry because most of them are incredibly inspiring. But it's also a really great way to get some really credible information in tiny, condensed, easy-to-consume chunks. Go.
No, I'm done. Like, I don't know how many more I'm going to give. We're not going to doing this all fucking day here.
No. Okay,
how many more do you have? Wrap it up.
Pharyngula, which I was surprised you didn't mention. I left that for you so you could mention.
That's true.
Pharyngula. And if you like your history, then I would recommend the Hardcore History Podcast. Because that's good, too.
But there'll be more in the notes. I don't want to stick too long on it. Besides, people who listen to the podcast, I don't know if they're near a computer, all right? They're probably, and if they are, they would probably be in a vehicle, and if they just sort of went out and tried to do the whole link thing, they would all die in a horrible crash.
This is a question from Richard. So all this is mostly for Richard, but I think this is also, I guess.
Such a huge segment just from this guy. You got enough out of this, Richard.
But I think people ask this kind of stuff all the time. You know, where are you getting your information? Where are you looking, you guys?
Yeah, but you know what that's saying? Where are you looking so I don't have to come to you anymore? Yeah, well, if I don't keep it secret, you're going to stop coming. Well, it's a possibility. Who am I, really? Who am I? Why should you fucking listen to anything
I
have to say?
Are you really that paranoid? I'm worried about you now.
Yeah?
I worry.
You should be worried. Can we move on?
You worried me, and now I'm leaving the city.
Good. It's always a healthy thing.
I'm leaving the city, and then I'm leaving the country. I'm leaving you here all
Let's
by
talk
yourself.
About something else now. Okay. I want to move on. Yeah, I want to talk about something that's been on my mind probably, I would say, for the last 2 weeks. Something I've been just, I guess, obsessing over. Videos that are making me cry all the time. Like, just emotionally powerful videos. This is what I've been sort of like my new quest, if you want. Because, you know, I have a tendency to try to predict where trends are going, right? What is 2012 going to be all about? And I have a few theories about that. And I think that the video that we're going to be talking about shortly, called Kony 2012, encompasses many of those elements. Like, if you understand what's so brilliant about that video, then you understand that there's a general trend of what's happening out there. And I want to give you what I think is my history of where this trend is going, where it's coming from. All right? Now, let's remember, if we will, the years 2001 to 2011, right? Let's just ruminate on that decade.
Bullet pointed.
Well, let's just say that okay, if we look at that decade that we live in, how would we compare what happened in that decade to how someone would compare like other decades throughout history? How would you compare, say, the 80s or the 90s? Or even the 50s or the 30s.
Well, I think that in the last decade, we've experienced a lot of global, national, and local, and personal, social,
economic
anxiety.
Oh, yeah. Over the place.
I think that the terms that we can use to categorize the last decade, because you have to also keep in mind that in the last decade, things have gotten less violent and better medicine.
Yeah, well, much more peaceful. This is the most peaceful time in human history.
Yeah, lots of good things. We're not saying it's all bad. But on the bad notes, it's been a very anxious year. Lots of uncertainty.
Very trying.
And also, like, constantly being reinforced this idea that despite the fact that we have this global communication system like the internet, we are all very powerless. You know, I think that, you know, everybody's always been quite powerless. This is not a new thing. But we are so aware of it now that you as an individual can affect very little realistically. You know, we need a lot of us making a lot of noise for anything interesting to ever happen. And I definitely think that, like, when we look back on this decade, it'll definitely be categorized by, like, just... you know, anti-anxiety medications and depression.
Well, let's just say that we may not all fondly remember these times, you know, trying fucking times. And with that, I feel, though, that people, you kind of reach a wall of how much you're able to feel about something. Like, I'll give you an example, right? In the end of the 1960s, if you listen to popular culture, music, and things around that time, you notice that right before, in the early 60s, time of revolution, songs about social issues, so on and so forth. But in the 70s, people were just sick and tired. I mean, you can only care so much. They were ready for something different. They were ready for the Carpenters, the least meaningful music in the world, like a happy feel good, I want to feel something other than just terror, you know? Like when you're just ready to feel other emotions. Hey, it's time to dance. Let's do the disco thing, right? Let's be self-indulgent. Let's care about something else for just a moment, because I think that people were just, you know, taxed to shit about one emotion. And I think that for us, we're a bit taxed when it comes to anxiety. You know, I think that we're just, everyone's a little bit tired of being made afraid. I mean, at the beginning of 2000, that's all that everybody was, afraid. Oh my God, it's an orange alert, red alert, fucking terrorists are going to attack you. And I mean, watch old videos about people saying that they were afraid that their little podunk town was going to be attacked by fucking Al-Qaeda.
But think about this. It's a much more wide issue. We're terrified of terrorism. We're scared of environmental catastrophe. You know, we're constantly freaking out about that kind of stuff. Jake and I, about 2 weeks ago, watched a documentary about plastic in the ocean, and I can no longer live my life without that constantly coming. Every time I throw anything away, and I mean this, Jake can attest to this, I'm constantly saying, okay, plastic
you're
in
off
the ocean.
To the ocean. See you later. Go poison our environment.
I am horrible. And I think, like, we're a very guilty, scared, anxious community of people in North America right now, especially.
All
right.
Now, so take this feeling, and now you're sort of like, well, what do you do with it? Well,
you medicate it. That's what I do.
Well, that's usually the first response. You'll notice that when times are rough, people tend to do more drugs. That's just kind of like the reality of it.
Okay.
But yes,
kidding.
That's the first. Substance abuse is the first thing that you notice. But eventually what you will notice is that there are certain other emotions that people are really ready for. Now, part of that is this general attitude that some people are trying to put forward that we should have, which is rather than being terrified about the future of humanity, we should all be hopeful. We should all be hopeful because we're like, hey, we're talented motherfuckers and we can do some cool shit when we want to. And, you know, there's about a zillion other reasons. If you want to really know, there's actually a couple TED Talks. Carissa mentioned TED. You can go on there to just feel as though the Earth is, you know, not totally doomed by us and generally feel good. But along those lines, I mean, like, I think that 2012 is people being ready to feel good again, like to feel like they can care about something.
I don't even know if it's that we're ready to feel good. It's that we're in a position where we are. Our desire to feel good, our need for it,
is so powerful.
Is very exploitable.
Oh yeah.
And very smart people are going to start exploiting it. And the word exploit has a totally negative context.
You can exploit a mind by basically creating a conglomerate of individuals.
Absolutely.
That dig for the minerals. That's exploitation.
Yeah, technically, those people in Brazil that are really good at soccer were exploited. They were poor and hungry to be famous and to be, you know, rich. And
for the beautiful women, those bastards
were
exploited.
They were exploited to become good at soccer. Not all exploitation can be bad. Sometimes it's good. And the Kony 2012 video is in a lot of ways good. A good way of exploiting our feeling of terror and like we can't fix anything and we are useless and suck.
But it's not just even that. It's like we're useless and suck, but we feel there is a general thing. Like if you watch the Kony 2012 video, you'll notice that they're always hinting at this notion of saying this is a popular movement. We need to prove the popular movements have the capacity to do good. And if we do this, and this is another way that they're very manipulative, if we do this, if you do Kony 2012, then you can save the world. And you know, when you put a really just...
They don't officially say that, but you mean like there's a feeling...
There's an implicit kind of understanding here that you're like, this is an example of a popular movement. And a popular movement whose goals, by the way, are pretty damn simple. Like even when you... When you list the objections, and I think I should probably start by listing many of the objections that come from the organization Invisible Children and some of the, you know, the nature of the video itself, where some of the objections were, number one, Invisible Children's finances are questionable if you think that the amount of money that's being spent on people rather than salaries and all this other kind of stuff is unacceptable. If you're like one of those people that really sort of like looks down at the numbers and says, I think that isn't right. And if they have like a fairly poor rating, which is what they do, their explanation, by the way, is being that they just don't have like the necessary counsel to get the rating. Many logical explanations, by the way, to many objections, which make cloud the fucking issue. Like, I'm not going to tell you what the whole thing is. Are their finances good or bad? I seriously don't actually care. I think that their influence and the power of their message more than takes care of some of the objections that I read, quite honestly, because I'm like, look, this is... You can't always run just a charity. I believe in social enterprise. I believe that a person who does good should still make some fucking money. Like, you shouldn't be broke ass.
Mm-hmm. And if you really look at the numbers, there you said it was about 30% actually goes directly to the cause.
Right. 37, I think, is what
And that's actually not that bad, because if you think about it, the money that's going into things like the big one... United Way. Here's the problem with the United Way is that the United Way is a money dispensing organization. Mm-hmm. So quite a bit of the money that
goes
raised,
into dispensing.
Goes into administrative costs, goes into things like that. But here's what people don't think about. And this is coming from somebody who worked in non-for-profits forever. This was going to be my career, so I know it from the inside out. When they give you money, it's going to an organization that is probably going to use that money for its administrative costs.
Yep, it's sort of like it's twice cooked.
Exactly. So you also have to keep that in mind. Like, when you're donating to organizations, and I don't want to say anything bad about the United Way, even though...
No, well, there's a part of me that says they're still necessary because there's many smaller groups that could never get funding if it wasn't for the United Way.
So if you're donating to the United Way, good for you. I'm not trying to rain on your parade, but it is...
But be aware.
It is almost always better to give directly to an organization that you believe in because it's going to be, like, there's going to be organizations the United Way gives to that you're not going to agree with. So you're going to feel more comfortable, and also more of the money is going to go to the actual organization because they won't have to twice cook it, like you said.
Right. So, it will not be double cooked.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, I feel like people bitching about that, it feels a little bit arbitrary.
Well, there's always going to be, like, obviously when the eye of the internet falls upon you, there's going to be, you know, obviously anything that is open to scrutiny is going to be scrutinized. And, you know, there's a lot that you could still scrutinize because there's parts of Invisible Children that I'm like, oh, that's not cool. Like him going to Liberty University and saying some pretty, like, fundamentalist shit about his goal. Because, you know, he reminds me of the filmmaker for Kony 2012. I forget his name. But he reminds me of Steve Jobs in a way. Somebody who believes in the impossible, who's got these weird frou-frou ideas, right? Who's like, I'm going to change the world. And you know that many of their beliefs are just not based on anything that's grounded. But those individuals have an amazing ability to do shit because they're not grounded, right? And other people were like, yeah, we're just... Their followers are also ungrounded. So they just launch these motherfuckers up in outer space. They're like, yep, we're just gonna go with them because he has vision or whatever. And even if it's not realistic, even if the goals are just totally, which is not what I'm claiming, but even if their goals are just, you know, they're not really the most efficient and effective way to deal with the problem over there. Because, you know, the army of Joseph Kony, called the Lord's Resistance Army, the LRA, always, there's a religion for you, but anyways. This group is just a tiny fraction of its size, and it's no longer in Uganda. You know, it's a small part of a much more complicated fabric that has to do with oil monies and governments being involved.
And religious beliefs,
yeah, which is why the Kony 2012 never mentions in the video anything about the religion and the cultish aspect of Joseph Kony, how he says he's the Holy Spirit and the conduit for it, and how he uses many of those, you know, religious and spiritual beliefs of these individuals for his mind control. So no one's going to deal with that
shit. So I think we got caught up a bit in the hate. So it's there's a lot of things that this video is oversimplifying. And you were saying before that one of the other things people don't like is that this is a narrative being told through the eyes of a little white boy in order for us to feel compassionate about people in the third world.
Specifically black people.
People felt uncomfortable with that, and rightly so, that we couldn't have had the same kind of compassion if it wasn't being told through the eyes of a little white boy.
Right, but, you know, you have to be pragmatic. If I can show you studies, real studies, that demonstrate that people have a harder time being empathetic with people that have different skin tones, then, I don't want to live in a world of shouldas. If the best thing to help African people is to use an intercessor white person to try to convey the message, then I'm sorry to tell you that you live in a racist world and we have to fucking deal with it. Like, I don't want to try to live in a world of shouldas. The truth is, like, certain issues just need to be dealt with. And this is, I think, ultimately the power, if you want, of Kony 2012, is that, yeah, the message is overly simplified. Maybe Joseph Kony's not the most important person to get rid of. Maybe there's a lot of other things you need to focus on. But here's the problem. You can't get people, the mass, to focus on anything that is more complicated than a sentence. In fact, Kony 2012 is not a sentence, right? It is a name, and it is a number. And those... That is what is so brilliant about this campaign. It's like, yes, you have to understand that the mass of people is like a bunch of idiot sheep moving one direction to the next that don't really have this will that can be easily understood, but certain things move them. What is moving people now? Well, creating an emotional connection is actually moving people. We talked about exploiting emotions. Well, we're ready to feel hopeful again, to see the fucking human triumph of someone. You know, speaking of human triumph, there is a video that I want people to go watch. I want you to go to the fan page, and I want you to watch this video about a young Korean kid who won this talent competition. Now, who knows if the story is 100% accurate, but it doesn't matter because of it's the story's impact on you. It's this kid who's been homeless since he was 5 years old, and he's 22 now, and he's just he looks like the most beaten-down kid you'd ever seen in his life. He's like, sold. Literally sold. You know, who knows what kind of things that poor kid has done. Like, he probably doesn't even want to talk about it. And he goes on this singing competition. And when he's there, one of the judges asks him, why is it that you want to sing? And he said that the reason he wanted to do so was that when he was at a bar, I think collecting bottles or something like that, and he saw a singer, and that singer, the way that they were, you know, like the words that were coming out seemed to him so genuine. And, you know, like, I wonder that a kid who tries to live, a homeless child on the streets, would be very good at reading people. He would know what's genuine, what's not.
Oh, absolutely.
And here he sees someone singing, and he never has seen someone be so genuine, so true. And then that's why he wanted to sing, so that he felt that that's something that he could do, because otherwise here was a lonely individual. He had no parents, was alone, and he goes on the singing competition and he blows everyone away, and there's not a dry tear in the fucking place. And, you know, this is a Korean singing program, and in a matter of hours there are 24 million people that are watching it and shedding those same tears. 24 million tears shed for one individual in just a matter of hours. And you realize, like, there is something powerful there, but it's not quite, we don't quite know what that is. It's just the eye of the people can be on you. And I'm like, how weird and transformative must that be for a child who his entire life, as far as he can remember, no one has ever paid attention, and now he has 24 million people who know who he is. That's pretty fucking weird. That's not normal. That's never happened. Hello, global experiment here. But you'll notice, though, that the cool thing about it is that one of the most powerful ways you can get to people is to just do that. Like, people are ready to feel hopeful. That's why you get 24 million views in just a matter of a few days, or you go viral like Kony 2012, and you're like, here's something emotional that has an impact on you. Here's a way to transform the fucking world. Do it. And here's a super simple way that you can actually make a difference, which is the thing that you said before. We feel powerless. We don't know how to do this. This video, Kony 2012, gives you the impression that you can. That's why it's such a popular movement among students. Young, naive people that can be easily moved. Well, you need that in any movement, right? And you know what? If you can get it right with them, then you know you got something right, because they will just fall for the most emotional. They're teenagers. They don't have any wisdom, right? Like, just see what is grabbing their emotion and realize that, you know, most of us are still like that, you know? Like, we respond to things that we feel connected with. And fuck, I got to tell you, at the end of watching the Kony 2012, if you're not moved emotionally to some degree, you're a robot. You're a robot. You cannot watch that kid, that Jacob, the kid who shares my namesake, cry when he talks about, when he remembers his brother and what he would say to his brother.
Yeah, and how he doesn't want to be on Earth anymore because he misses his brother. It's just like, oh my God, my heart is aching.
Yeah, it will basically just, but this is one of the most important things about trying to make a popular movement, is that you cannot convey the suffering of a million people. And in fact, you shouldn't try. You should convey the suffering of one person. Make that crystal clear, because that's how we identify. That's how we empathize. Our mirror neurons work for one individual at a time, not for 10,000. In fact, what happens at 10,000 is we feel almost nothing. That's the weird thing about it. Like, the more deaths, the more it's like, oh yeah, no big deal. But if you can actually see the result of suffering, the one person that you can identify with, that is the most powerful thing that you can do. And that's something that we gotta, you know, wake up here in the atheism community. Like, we've gotta move away from this. This is going to feel so weird, the good atheist saying this, but we've got to move away from a large part of our negative attitude, and we have to actually start to appeal to people's hopes. You know, like, who we are as human beings is something that we have to convey. This is ultimately the most important part of of even non-belief, saying like, look, we're discarding belief, but we still believe in humans. Like, we still think that that's a, you know, like the human being, human life is something that shouldn't be tossed or thrown away. And we know why. It doesn't have to be answered logically. If I show you a story of someone who's living through some kind of disaster and you were touched, then the answer is clear. That's what you want. Like, you cannot help but empathize with the suffering of others, and you don't want it. If you do, you're psychotic. You've been long in prison. Something's wrong with you. The rest of us normal people that are not psychos, yeah, we empathize with other people. And we want to feel that hope. Like, I feel like to some degree we have ignored that. I feel as part I'm part of those voices that have ignored that because I'm like a hater. It's my job. But, you know, I'm not the only fucking voice. And I think that there's a big call out there for people that want to feel hopeful about the future, that want to feel, more importantly, that we are connected. That, you know, any atheist group that springs up is not a group that springs up in response to ideological differences of another group. It just springs up because they're just people trying to get together. But ultimately, we have to have the feeling of togetherness that extends beyond even a group. Just the thought of people being human, of us trying to sort of like, we want to make sure that humans don't suffer. We don't want to see individuals living what Jacob has to live through, where he sees his parents die and has to recall the horrible memories that are forever in his brain. Like, we don't want that. Who wants that? A psycho. A fucking psycho. Anyways, maybe we can learn a couple lessons about the need to reach to people empathetically. You know, I'm doing my best to kind of like poke the scene and be like, hey guys, can we pay attention to what these dudes are doing? Because, you know, the Invisible Children is a Christian organization, okay? Mm-hmm. It has an evangelical, you know, bend to them. So this is something you should be aware of. But they're doing important work. And even people over there that were critical of what they did could not be critical of the organization. They're like, they do good work.
So here's the question. What are you going to do for 2012?
What am I going to do for Coney 2012?
Yeah, for Coney 2012, sorry.
Coney 2012. Well, one thing I do still want to do is I want to go and I want to poster on April 20th in Toronto. I still want to do it because I want to see if this movement will actually be popular, if it'll get, you know, like past this one hump where, yeah, there's a lot of skepticism and that kind of stuff. But I feel like in general, knowing who Joseph Kony is makes you know what is happening in Uganda, and that's just... That is the more important thing. Like, the campaign asks for no more than your knowledge of and awareness of who this man is. And the invitation is on you to fucking figure out all the details. If there's some part of Invisible Children that you do not like, there's lots of articles that goes on the specifics of that. But I do want people to remember that I'm like, if you're just saying, well, there must be an alternative, and there probably is. If you're not really supporting that alternative, then what the fuck is your problem? You're going to just talk shit about people trying to do good? Don't be that guy. Or girl.
Yeah. I will be in Calgary doing like sidewalk chalk-related art with other art students for Coney 2012 because I don't want to waste all the paper. So
That's fair. Or, you know, that way, too, you're not giving them money. And if you have any sort of objection to giving the money.
I don't really have any objection to giving the
no,
money.
No, but I mean the people who do. I still think that the point that they had, a general point of saying, we want to see if this popular movement can work, like, that for me is the more interesting part of the experiment. Like, I want to be part of that because I want to understand it. And I think that there are a lot of lessons that the atheist community can learn from Coney 2012. Like, pay attention, guys. These people are doing it right, and we need to be this fucking slick. Like, no joke. No joke. Okay, you know what? I think that pretty much wraps up the second half that we had to re-record. Four times.
Think we ended up recording over the part where we actually talked about what
happened.
I know. Oh, okay.
I know. I'm just saying that we had... It's broken up into two pieces.
Oh, okay.
It's broken up into two chunks.
Are you... Okay.
Cool. They'll notice a weird... Halfway through, they'll notice that it sort of like jumped in terms of the... Well, actually, we'll see if they'll find out. We'll see if they find out. Maybe they won't.
Are we editing out this part we're talking about right now?
Maybe. I'll wait and see until I listen to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I always do. That's why I give myself so much time before I put up the shows now.
So I have to say goodbye to everyone because I won't be on the show for a couple months. I'm off to go work in Calgary for a bit and then do a secret mission in Italy.
She's leaving me. I'm going to be all alone.
Only for a couple months. You'll be fine. God
damn it. I hate
fine.
Stupid poverty.
Yeah, unfortunately, me being from Calgary and Jake being from Montreal necessitates us being apart every couple of months for a couple of months.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's hard, but we try to get through it. And
so bye. I'm sorry. I won't be on the show for a couple months.
Yeah. Well, when you come back, maybe we'll do a mailbag episode because I've been meaning to do one, but I don't want to do it for a little while. So yeah. If anybody's interested in a mailbag episode, let me know. Make sure that you go on the forums. Everybody who hasn't checked it out, go on. Tell us about you. Tell us about stuff that you like, or post up links that you think are funny or whatever. Go to the forums. It helps.
Oh, and we're going to put that punishment thing in the forums, right? You're actually going to do that?
Yeah. Punishment suggestions. And the other thing, too, I want to make sure that everybody remembers, go to the site and like stuff. Like articles. Become a fan of the fan page. I cannot stress enough how important that is in terms of
saving the good atheist.
Saving the good atheist. I mean, like, it really gets the word out. It's unbelievable. Like, your word, it's almost like voting, really. It's voting for telling someone, this person is cool.
Yes.
So I need all of you to vote for me to be cool. Because you know what I want to do by the end of 2012? Well, not quite the end, but I want to win the atheism about.com best atheist podcast. I want to win it because I'm like, I think by the time we're done, all the interviews, all the cool podcasts we've done, I'm like, I think I deserve it. And this is going to be a hard battle, guys, because Atheist Experience, who won last year, they're huge. They're huge compared to me. Like, it will be in a fight, but I want to win that one. I'm like, I think if we manage to save Good Atheist, we'll deserve it. We'll deserve it. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Fortan.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.